Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, whether you're finishing a night shift at the hospital or driving home from a midnight food delivery run, disrupted sleep is more than just a personal challenge. It's a public health issue. This morning, we're diving into the hidden toll of sleepless nights with sleep expert Tom Coleman. Tom, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much for having me on, Claire.
This is an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, anyone that's worked shift, I certainly did the breakfast shift for a long time, and it can be hugely debilitating. So as humans, are we designed, is our circadian rhythm designed that we would sleep through the night only?
It's a really good question. There's a lot of theories on it. I mean, like, we are diurnal creatures. We're not nocturnal. So if we are working nights, it's contra to our circadian rhythm. Okay. Now, within our circadian rhythm, there are certain people who are very early birds. And then there's people who are, you know, normal, waking up at a normal time, going to bed before midnight. And then there's people who are night owls. And there's a whole host of different within the species. So as a group, it would be advantageous for certain people to be up very early and other people to be up very late. And that's known as your chronotype. So there is some leeway there, but really, essentially, we're not designed to be working during the night and sleeping during the day. It's contrary to our biology.
And what are those different chronotypes? How would people recognise who they are? Or is it just based on how you feel in your waking hours?
I mean, you could clinically test it in terms of melatonin release. But for people to sort of figure that out, I think many people kind of know, are they a morning person or are they a night owl? It's about 30-40-30, and you find the sweet spot for you in terms of going to bed and, you know, the amount of sleep you require. Some people are just no good in the afternoon, evening. Other people kind of get the second wind, you know. Most of us kind of know what our chronotype is, and, you know, we plan our lives around that. We should be able to, but I suppose the working life is kind of more directed towards early birds. Our societal clocks and demands that we have set up, it's kind of more suited to morning people.
Yeah, that 9 to 5, I know not everybody works those hours, but that's sort of the majority. And that means people are getting up early, they're sort of sitting at desks or whatever the job is at 9, then they're stopping for lunch. And is that slump in the afternoon, is that quite normal? How can we mitigate that?
Yeah.
Because I know some companies are starting to bring in sleep pods, but it's not necessarily the norm, is it?
It's not the norm. Now, we have slumps in our circadian rhythm. It's kind of dips in energy. And it's just how our biology works. The morning time, cortisol levels are at their highest. So it's a really good time to get to, you know, deal with stressful events and get things done. So, like, working with our biology, tackle the hardest task first when it comes to work. Work in bouts of 90 minutes. We know we sleep in 90 minutes. These are called ultradian cycles. The brain works in ultradian cycles during the day. So you're much better off to work in pulses. So again, we're working with our biology. There's natural dips then where we just take a little step back and we change it up. And I would kind of say to people, learn how to surf that wave. Don't be constantly looking for how can I beat this slump and how can I push through. You know, I mean, as a social group, you know, we should be actually getting together and taking it easy in the afternoons and evenings. You know, the day, our waking hours, is kind of split up into two phases. The active phase, the first 8 hours, and then the passive phase, the second 8 hours. So really, I mean, that's how our biology works. You know, the 9-to-5ers, fine. The shift workers, on the other hand, highly, highly disruptive. And I would say our society is built on the back of shift workers. We have to give them much more appreciation.
So let's talk about that shift worker then. I mean, for some people, it's a constant. It's a set time, like, you know, the breakfast shows I worked on. It's the same time every morning indefinitely. If you look at the likes of Ian Dempsey, he's been working that shift, you know, for 35 years. But for other people, it's different one week to the next week, and you're one mm-hmm. week on lates and then you're one week on earlies. Is there any way to try and get a handle on that? And what are the health implications for shift workers?
So there are health implications. To be mindful, it is a modifiable risk factor. And I say this to people that go, no, I can't, I have to work shifts. And look, you have a choice, you mightn't like it. I say to shift workers, your choice is outside of work have more of an implication in terms of health protective behaviours and health risk behaviours. So for the shift worker, I suppose the issue is if it's constantly changing, 2 days, two nights, 4 days off, it's a very common shift within the police force, within nursing and things like that. The challenge is that there's nothing set in place. And the advice for shift workers is completely different to the advice for 9-to-5ers when it comes to sleep and nutrition and so on and so forth. You're constantly having to battle your body trying to realign and adapt because we have a 24-hour master orchestrator timer. Now, all of the systems like your digestive system and cardiovascular and all these systems have independent timers and they're all misaligned. And so when we're trying to work, we feel exhausted, tired, and we're going home then and we're trying to sleep, even though we're wrecked, we cannot sleep. So it is a challenge. Now, if you're on a set shift, like Mr. Dempsey there, fair play to him for all those years, then that is, you can adapt to that to some degree, or you can set your life up around that and it doesn't change because the brain likes that thing of set routines. But for the shift worker then, that this is where the challenge happens. So we try and help the body and brain realign. We use light. It's the main lever when it comes to changing your circadian rhythm. And you look at your shift pattern and you figure out when is the best time to eat. So, you know, there are good times to eat if you're on nights and there are times that you should avoid food. Dr. Claire Corish, I've done a podcast with her recently around this and she's published information on this. So like there is information there. Nap, learn how to nap, learn how to switch off, plan your sleep in cycles of 90 minutes. You know, all of this stuff you have to try and adapt and learn. But you won't really, you know, we're not designed to be like that. So it is a challenge. And I've done it myself. I've worked in a hospital. So I know, and I've done nights and early shifts and late shifts. And it's the constant change that our bodies are struggling to keep up with. So then your time off and your unwind and your restoration time and relaxation time are of paramount importance. Because if you don't, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, I definitely ate more when I was doing shift work because my body was constantly seeking to be propped up, not to mention I was having something to eat before my shift started, then something to eat after, then a lunch, then a dinner, you know, so that was just an extra meal going in almost, but your body would need it. And I definitely got ill more. My immune system was 100% compromised because there was days I could nap, there was days I couldn't with whatever else was going on work-wise or family-wise. So yeah, you can feel the stress on the body for sure. Is this something we should be talking about it more and pushing for policy change around this? I know in the transport industry, they've done a huge amount of work into making sure the drivers are only working for a certain amount of time because they recognise that that is a safety and health issue, not only for the driver, but for the people that they're transporting. Should we be doing this for all health workers to stop all this 2 days on, 4 days off, one late, one early, to help people become Ian Dempsey as best they can?
Oh, no. I really believe that we should talk about it more because we take it for granted. The 9-to-5ers don't have a clue that, you know, every piece of equipment in a hospital, every drug in a hospital and everybody who works in a hospital, all shift workers are created by shift workers. All our police force are shift workers. All our hotel workers are shift workers. There's people getting up in the middle of the night or, you know, at 11 o'clock at night when you're going to bed to drive a delivery truck to deliver your fresh croissants that you demand for your coffee in the morning, right? All of this stuff is you know, it's our society. Society is unfortunately now a 24/7 society. So we should be looking at shift patterns, not non-disruptive shift patterns that are better than some of the ones that I've kind of seen out there. Now, because the disruptions are going to occur, like you spoke about, your ghrelin level, the hunger hormone, is much higher. It's higher in night shift workers, so they get cravings. And then immunity, well, you make immune cells while you sleep and you restock, so that's not happening as much as it should be. So there's a consequence to all of this. There's a medium and long-term consequence to this. But, you know, we should be giving them support, and that should come from the bottom down and from the top down as well, from policy. And, you know, looking at doing an analysis of different shift patterns and finding out which ones work best without having, you know, without money being the bottom line all the time.
Well, if you want to find out more about Tom's work or listen to that podcast that he mentioned there about the research around shift work, you can go to tomcoleman.ie, sleep expert. Tom Coleman, thank you so much for coming on. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Emer Daly of Daily Wellbeing is back with her latest in health and wellness stories. You're very welcome, Emer. And we're having a focus on festival season. We're all still buzzing here in Bower and News Talk about All Together Now and the Go Loud Lounge, and we still have Body and Soul and Electric Picnic to come. So you're going to share a few stories that can help people.
Exactly. One of my first stories is how many drinks can make a hangover kick in. So according to Dr. Bhavanisha Shah, she has shared that around 8 units is that danger zone for a hangover. And for a lot of people listening, they might not know what 8 units is. So 8 units is 4 pints of cider or beer, or 4 regular glasses of wine, or if you're drinking vodka at a festival, that's about 6 vodkas. And it might sound like a lot of drink, or it might sound like not a lot of drink to people, but that's around the point where you're going to be impacting your sleep, your vision, your coordination, and the next day you could be looking at hangover town. So just being mindful of how much you're drinking at a festival, I know it's probably the last thing you want to be thinking of, but just even saying to yourself, you know what, maybe I will get a 0.0, or how can you work on the next day? And so Dr. Bhavanisha has shared a few things that you can do so you don't get overwhelmed as well. If you're sleeping in a tent, make sure that you get a lot of sleep. Set yourself up nice and comfortably. Bring a pillow down with you. What do you need to get a good night's sleep? Hydrate as much as you can throughout the day. Bring down those electrolytes. I'm sure when you take them out, everybody's going to say, can I have one? And eat balanced foods. There might not be great options. Actually, today, festivals, the food element seems to be a huge part of it. But grab yourself some chips or some bread, something before you head back to your tent. And that can really save you in the morning.
I mean, everyone needs to have fun, but it's just good to know, because there's nothing worse, I'd imagine, than waking up in a hot tent hungover. So if a few of those tips can help with that, so you can go again.
Exactly.
You know, thank you very much for that. You are going to Electric Picnic. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I will be going to Electric Picnic with my lovely horse rescue. They're a rescue centre for all animals across Ireland. And myself and my sister Niamh will be doing doga with them in the morning time at Electric Picnic. So we'll be doing a yoga class surrounded by lovely rescue animals that are there to maybe give you some extra TLC in the morning and get the energy flowing as well through a nice energizing morning yoga class.
Fab. Tell us a little bit about the endometriosis education program that's going to be rolled out in Irish schools. This is good news, because currently it takes 9 years for somebody to get a diagnosis, and often women don't know about it because they weren't educated.
I know. I think this is a huge story that is such a positive impact for female health in Ireland. So the MISHA program, which stands for Menstrual Information Specialising in Endometriosis, has already reached over 1,700 students in 14 schools across Ireland. And just to really break it down to people, that endometriosis affects 1 in 10 females in Ireland. So that is a huge amount. And by educating young adults at the stage that they are in school with credible information and really breaking it down for them to be easy to digest so that they know the information that they need if they feel the symptoms of endometriosis coming on, or if they have a friend who they could give that information to as well.
And that really important point that painful periods are not normal. Quite often it is normalized and it's just part of being a woman. Mm-hmm. But mild cramping, yes. Very painful periods, no. And it's well worth having the factual information. It might not necessarily be endometriosis, but even just having that in our general conversation in our schools will make a massive difference. Emer Daly, thanks as ever.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.